Radio Prague News. Top 09, which on Monday pulled out of its coalition with the Civic Democrats at Prague City Hall, is pushing for 7 council seats and the post of mayor. The police have uncovered close to 1 million litres of untaxed liquor in storage in a number of warehouses around the country. And there are growing protests against President Zeman's decision not to name a widely recognised Catholic intellectual professor. Top 09, which on Monday pulled out of its coalition with the Civic Democrats at Prague City Hall, is pushing for a new agreement under which it would get 7 seats on the 11-member council and the post of mayor. Top 09, which won the last elections, has been increasingly critical of overpriced city projects such as the Blanka Tunnel or Open Card, and in future wants to oversee key areas such as public transport, property and financing. It has offered its right-wing coalition partner just 4 council seats and made it clear that if the offer is rejected, it would approach the Social Democrats or seek support for a broad coalition. The Civic Democrats have said they are not prepared to relinquish the post of mayor. The police have uncovered close to 1 million litres of untaxed liquor in storage in a number of warehouses around the country. The tanks of alcohol had been cemented underground in order to escape inspections relating to the methanol scandal which broke out last year. Several people from an unnamed firm have been detained for questioning. The loss in taxes is estimated at 300 million crowns. There are growing protests against President Miloš Zeman's decision not to name Martin Putna, a widely recognised Catholic intellectual professor. 7 other professorial candidates are refusing to accept their decrees from the president's hands and say they will boycott the ceremony in protest. Others have criticised the president's decision and are awaiting the outcome of a meeting between President Zeman and the rector of Charles University, Václav Hampel. Under growing public pressure, President Zeman on Monday clarified the reason for refusing to name Mr. Putna professor. He said it was due to the wording of a banner that he carried at Prague's Gay Pride Parade 2 years ago, which did not correspond to the president's notion of how a university professor should behave in public. The president is to give a press conference on the issue on Wednesday. The Ombudsman has said he will look into complaints regarding how banks and insurance companies are treating older clients. Apparently, some financial institutions are refusing to issue older people credit cards and are asking them to pay higher health insurance on trips abroad purely on the grounds of age. The Ombudsman's office is planning a survey of 45 banks and 52 insurance companies to get an overview of the situation. The results should be known in August. Cyprus is reportedly planning to close down 4 of its embassies, including its embassy in Prague, within the framework of tough austerity measures. It is not clear when the decision will come into force. Greece, also in financial straits, is selling dozens of buildings around Europe and moving its diplomatic missions to cheaper quarters. The move is likewise expected to affect its Prague representation. Delta Airlines will renew its direct flights from Prague to New York. The flights, which were suspended in November, are being renewed as of next Saturday. There will be 7 flights a week as previously. The cost of a return ticket should be around 15,000 crowns. The town of Kladno is to get 1.5 million crowns in compensation from Václav Havel Airport for excessive noise pollution over the summer. Maintenance work on the airport's main runway has necessitated the use of alternate runways, meaning that between now and September, planes will be flying at low altitudes over densely inhabited areas. The Kladno authorities have said they will use the money for road maintenance. And finally, a quick look at the weather forecast. The coming days should be partly cloudy to overcast with scattered showers and afternoon highs reaching 20 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova, and that's the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. My name is Jan Richter. In our program today, Czech police discover nearly 1 million litres of illegal alcohol. Then, Baník Ostrava come back from brink of financial meltdown. But what does the future hold for one of the country's best-known football clubs? And later, we visit a new location of the City of Prague Gallery, which is about to open after extensive renovation. All that coming up, so please stay tuned. After last year's methanol crisis in the Czech Republic, the police redoubled efforts in uncovering bootleg liquor. A week ago, it was confirmed Tuesday, they found three secret sites and uncovered close to 1 million litres of undeclared alcohol. Earlier searches at different warehouses around the country missed the hidden chambers as they were sealed underground beneath meter-thick concrete. Jan Bollinger has the story.
A video clip released by the country's anti-organized crime unit shows it wasn't easy, even after detection, to get to major stashes of alcohol stored underground. Required was help from firefighters, customs officials and others, as well as the use of specialized geological tools, and above all, heavy machinery to pound through the concrete floor. In the video, a digger with a mounted hydraulic jackhammer breaks the ground. Much later, officials cut through with an abrasive saw. The find yielded almost 1 million liters of alcohol worth up to 300 million crowns in unpaid taxes. The head of the crime unit, Robert Schlachtad, reacted by saying the case would make it into the history books. He called the amount of alcohol found enormous and the method of storage sophisticated. Fines came at three warehouse sites across the country, whose owners are already charged for their roles in the methanol crisis that broke out last September. Then, bootleg spirits mixed with deadly methanol made it onto the market. Countless people ended up in hospital and had to be treated, some of them suffering permanent health damage. In all, some 40 people died. The case was the worst of its kind in the Czech Republic in recent memory, and the latest find suggests that the sophistication of bootleggers goes even further than previously suspected. Some of the facts, according to the police. Supply lines for filling the tanks underground stretched as far as 100 meters off-site, apparently making them easy to miss in earlier inspections. The holding tanks beneath the floor, 28 by 2 by 2 meters in size, are estimated to have been put into use between 8 and 10 years ago, with no other intention in mind than storing alcohol illegally. One of the sites is in northern Bohemia, the other two in Moravia. So far, laboratory tests have found the alcohol was untainted, but in two cases, they uncovered samples of 94 and 96% alcohol. Further test results are awaited. Investigators do not yet know or have not yet confirmed where the alcohol originated, nor have they pressed charges against anyone yet. The head of the police unit also did not say how many individuals are suspected in the case, nor is it known if there are similar facilities that remain to be found. Simply put, at this point, no one is saying how far the rabbit hole goes. More information is likely to be revealed in the coming days and weeks.
Jan Wellinger reporting. Moving on to football now, where one of the Czech Republic's best-known clubs has just escaped bankruptcy and expulsion from the First Division. In fact, for a brief period on Monday, it appeared it really was curtains for Baník Ostrava. But how have the 2004 league champions found themselves in such dire straits? And what does the future hold for the club? Ian Willoughby reports.
For 15 minutes on Monday, Baník Ostrava were, to quote their owner, clinically dead. On the verge of bankruptcy and set to lose their First Division license, the football club's only hope was that Ostrava City Council purchase their Bazali Stadium. A vote was held on the proposal, and the aldermen decided not to buy, essentially condemning the club, whose history stretches back to 1922, to possible extinction as a significant force in Czech soccer. But then, in a dramatic turn of events, two councillors said they'd change their minds. A second show of hands was taken, this time in favour of the purchase. 9 years ago, Baník attracted huge, passionate crowds as the Silesians lifted the league title for the first and only time since the foundation of the independent Czech Republic. At that time, the club was apparently in good financial health. So what's happened in the interim? That's a question I put to journalist Michal Petrák of Deník Sport.
The financial trouble started with in the era of the previous owner of the club, who was Tomáš Pedera. Whether there was some financial mismanagement or something unlawful, I'm not the one who should judge that. But certainly at the time, the club started to fall into debt, and that's where the problem started.
Baník Ostrava have actually already been stripped of their top flight license in connection with their financial troubles. However, after Monday's guarantee of a financial injection, winning it back on appeal is regarded as a mere formality. But they're by no means out of the woods yet. For one thing, the city is paying 114 million crowns for the stadium, but the club's debts are estimated to stand at around 170 million crowns. What's more, the run-down Bazali ground, located in a potentially lucrative area, doesn't meet top-flight standards. Baník Ostrava may in the end have to wave goodbye to their traditional home, says Michal Petrák.
I think there will be some pressure from the city of Ostrava to move the club to Vítkovice, where another stadium is built and it is financed, was built, and it's the reconstruction of that stadium is financed from the city funds as well. And I think it will be reasonable for the city not to invest in two stadia, but to invest in one and force the club or demand that the club move to the other stadium.
So Baník Ostrava have, in a sense, survived their own death. But fans' relief will no doubt be tempered by the knowledge that that perpetuation may come at a considerable price.
Thank you, Ian Willoughby. You're tuned to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Coming up next, the City of Prague Gallery was given custodianship of the Colorado Mansfield Palace in Prague's Old Town a few years ago. Now the gallery is finally ready to open the building to the public and possibly make it one of its main exhibition and educational sites. In this week's In Focus, Marsha Wolinski headed over to the palace to speak with the team that is working on its new appearance.
Right next to one of the busiest tourist sites in Prague, across from the Old Town entrance to Charles Bridge, the Colorado Mansfield Palace disappears a little among the crowds of tourists and endless souvenir shops. But for some 400 years, up until the end of World War II, it was a place of high culture and political intrigue, both in terms of its location and social importance. The City of Prague Gallery is preparing to open up the top floor of the Colorado Mansfield Palace to the public at the end of this month. But a whole team of architects, art historians, conservationists, and others have been working hard to create a larger conception of what will be done with this unique space in the future. I spoke to Marek Pokorny, who is an external advisor to the gallery on this particular project, who sees an important future for this palace.
It is really a centrally located building which can play a key role for the City of Prague Gallery in the future, not only because it is in the center of the city, but there's a space that can be used for different purposes. We will be able to place an information center here for the whole institution. Then we would like to expand in two directions. We want to revitalize the preserved historical parts of the Colorado Mansfield Palace, including the Piano Nobile Hall and the Rococo elements, and open them to the public. The other floor, which will have a space for contemporary art, will open this season. And there is also the courtyard, which will be a very important public space for us.
One part of the fairly expansive building will be used for the gallery's existing education program, offering various art classes for children and adults. The top floor will open starting on May 25th, housing an exhibit by Jiří David. Later, the gallery will try to also offer a space for young talent, in the same way that some of the other city gallery sites have done in the past. The gallery is hoping that the symbiosis of new and old will provide something of interest for everyone. The historical halls are being prepared as well for a slightly later opening. Although much work had to be done in the second floor of the building, the gallery wants to leave the historical rooms practically in the same state as when they were acquired. The palace has seen a whole slew of occupants in the past 50 years and is little known by most Praguers. Although it is important for the team to bring the Colorado Mansfield Palace back to life, they also do not want to ignore its history.
Čili jde o to ten objekt rehabilitovat ve vztahu k veřejnosti.
It was important for us to revitalize this space for the public and to offer at least basic information about its significance, its structure, what was here in different periods of time and what has survived, even if it's not in the best shape possible. I think it is important that the visitors don't just see a perfectly finished piece, but if it's at all possible, witness the ravages of time, which always leave a mark on buildings of this kind.
The team working on renovations has walked a fine line, trying to make the historical spaces acceptable for a modern audience, but also not over-renovating, which would leave the space as a sterile museum piece. Visitors to the palace will thus be able to really understand what the grand halls were used for originally, but at the same time, see what time has done to the place.
I would really not like things like air conditioning to get into this place, because it doesn't belong here. Rather, projects of the City Gallery will have to adjust to and work with the space that is already here.
The halls of the palace, with wallpaper peeling off in places, beautifully creaking wooden floors, and large windows looking onto the square next to Charles Bridge, have seen a long and turbulent history. The historical and artistic advisor for the renovation project, Dr. Jan Nepomuk Asman, told me that there were houses standing on this coronation route for many decades before an actual palace was built.
When in the 17th century the idea of creating a palace in this location came about, the property came into the hands of an important noble family, the Counts von Schlick of Passau and Holich. They owned silver mines and minted the coin Jachimstaler, or Taler of Jachim, from which the word dollar comes from.
The Schlicks were part of a growing number of Protestant noblemen, and in the early 17th century their opposition to the ruling Catholic Habsburgs and their allegiance to the Protestant Winter King Frederick V cost Joachim André Schlick his life. He was among the first noblemen to be executed on Old Town Square in June 1621 to serve as an example to those who opposed the Habsburg rule. The palace changed a number of owners after the Battle of White Mountain and had been transformed also quite a number of times, but the remnants of the interior that are still visible today go back partly to the first half of the 18th century.
The most important year for us is 1735, when this building was greatly improved by the Prince Mansfeld Fondi, which is where the one half of the Colloredo Mansfeld name comes from. He also owned the Dobrich Chateau. Since the prince had no male heirs, his estate went to his daughter Isabella, who married František de Paula Gandakar from the Colloredo family. So this is how the Colloredo Mansfeld dynasty was formed.
The surviving interiors in the second floor of the palace, reminiscent of the Viennese Schönbrunn, but also Parisian styles and Rococo, were carefully renovated and upheld by Franz Josef Auersperg in the late 19th century. Probably the most stunning is the so-called Piano Nobile, an oval-shaped dance and reception hall with large mirrors and beautifully decorated ceiling. This hall had most likely even seen performances by Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, since the Colloredo Mansfeld family was among the most honored nobility at the time of Mozart's frequent visits to Prague.
It is very likely, because Mozart was invited into the homes of all the high nobility, the Thuns, the Bocois, the Choteks, the Gnostices, and all of these palaces were very close by. And the Colloredo Mansfeld family were the third most respected noble family at the time. These families ruled over the cultural life of the city from their palaces. Mozart's visits were always received with great appreciation, though a visit specifically to this palace was not in his surviving notes.
In the 1980s, Miloš Forman even used the Piano Nobile Hall in the Colloredo Mansfeld Palace to shoot some of the scenes for the movie Amadeus. The Piano Nobile also contains a very unique piece of art. the frescoes on its ceiling, although by content they were very similar to other decorative art of the time, were carried out in a technique that is now extinct. The architect responsible for the renovation, Stanislav Běhal, described the technique for me.
The most amazing element in this room are the frescoes. They are not that amazing in terms of their artistic value or even craftsmanship, but what makes them unique is that they have basically been left untouched since they were created in the 1760s, so this is truly the original. It is, of course, a bit dirty with age, but we can see here the original painting techniques, including the fact that they would finish painting, let it dry, and then if something didn't seem right, they would fix it up with dry chalk. This is something that we cannot see almost anywhere in Europe. We knew of the technique, but it was not preserved in most places. So this will be an important part of the historical tour.
The tour of the historical spaces will offer a number of these types of hidden mysteries, revealing what the shape of the floor tells us about the structure of the rooms or how the salons were protected from sunlight. The unique appearance of the inside of the palace is undisputable, but still the question remains whether this highly frequented location will attract the audience it seeks. Of course, thousands of tourists pass by the Colloredo Mansfeld Palace every day, but this part of town does not naturally attract many locals, specifically because of how crowded and tourist-focused it is. Marek Pokorný, though, isn't worried.
I think the location is brilliant in itself, but also from the point of view of the City of Prague Gallery. First of all, the amount of attention that sites on the so-called Royal Way receive is enormous. So we can certainly expect a great deal of interest from tourists. Before they get to the street crossing and walk onto the Charles Bridge, they do have a tendency to stop and look around. Even now, when the doors of the palace are closed, they try to get in. So the historical information about this place will be meant primarily for the tourists. On the other hand, the other activities that the gallery will be running here will serve as a good reason for Praguers, who usually try to avoid the central places in the city, to visit them. I'm hoping that the cultural programs scheduled for the evenings will attract a certain type of visitors who will be interested in activities tailored specifically to them.
Locals and tourists alike will be able to get the first look at the Colloredo Mansfeld Palace already this week. In the upcoming months, the historical tour will also open, and the ground floor of the palace will offer not only an information center about the Prague City Gallery, but also an art cafe, which should be a welcome respite from the crowds outside.
That edition of In Focus by Masha Wolinski was the final part of our program today. If you have any comments or questions, you can easily get in touch. Contact us at email at english@radio.cz or by post to Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. Just a reminder that all our programs are available online at radio.cz, and you can also follow Radio Prague on Facebook and on Twitter. But for now, from me, Jan Richter, and all of us here at Radio Prague, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.